Oh, maybe you're in there. Okay, maybe I didn't press long enough. Now, let us start our demo talk with a question. And certainly the question to you is, I will describe two types of yogis, two types of meditators. Number one, number two. And then the question is going to be, which one among the two yogis, number one and number two, is closer to the attainment of Nibbana? So, the first meditator, retreatant, is certainly one who is on retreat, but nonetheless is having second thoughts. Why am I here? What is this all for? This is useless. And then our yogi number one will say, after maybe half an hour of thinking like this, enough of this sitting, even though the schedule calls for 1 hour of meditation, my mind is tired, it's high time to take a nap. And then our yogi retreats back to the room and takes it very easy. And you can imagine what the yogi would be doing. And this yogi number one will also have listened to the instructions, but will think, the instructions are probably just a recommendation, but not necessarily to be followed to the point. And so there's much leeway there for experimentation. And this yogi will observe the rise and fall for a little bit, but not really stay with it. And when rise and fall, we'll be thinking about other things which are much more fascinating. And then, while sitting meditation, our yogi number one will open the eyes, look around, check whether the other meditators are meditating properly, and then we'll maybe close the eyes again, and then sit for a little longer, and then, totally frustrated, get up and leave the sitting. And this yogi will also hold to the general belief, life is short, and I need to enjoy myself. His maxim for life is to maximize happiness by way of indulging in sense pleasures. So this is yogi number one. Now comes the second case, yogi number two. This yogi comes on retreat, and to start with, he's already read quite a bit about Satipatthana meditation practice, thinks that this will work, and that this retreat will surely bring great benefits. And then our yogi number two will also apply himself or herself quite strongly to the practice, will follow the schedule, do 1 hour sitting, 1 hour of walking, sometimes even more than this, and will direct the mind again and again to the primary object. This meditator will carefully observe the predominant objects, and then the mind sadhana will be pretty much glued to, you know, the predominant object of observation, whatever the object may be. And sadhana, then gradually in this sadhana meditator, we find, you know, that he or she is sadhana, gaining a glimpse of the nature of the various objects. So the qualities, the characteristics of physical as well as mental objects. So now the big question to you. Which yogi do you think is closer to Nibbana? Number one or number two? Or maybe number three? Or maybe none of those, who knows? So, any answers?
I think two.
So, number two. So then, what is wrong with number one?
Applying themselves to the practice.
Yes. So it's not applying himself or herself to the practice, taking it easy. What else? Yeah, not taking it seriously. Any other qualities? How would you characterize Yatna Yogi number one?
More doubt.
Yes, so he comes on retreat already with plenty of doubts. And then? So he's not applying himself. And then, Jim?
Well, I would just say his wish hasn't yet come fully to the surface. Something impelled him to the retreat, but it hasn't yet matured.
Okay, one could say that. That's correct. And then, what certain other qualities characterize our yogi number one?
Wrong view.
Why is that? Because of his maxim for life.
Yeah.
Well, you could say that.
Senses pleasure. This is not it.
Okay. And so then, detect still some other quality in yogi number one?
Pride.
What's that?
Pride.
Why is that?
I'm not going to follow the instructions.
Oh, never follow the instructions? Okay, yeah, good point. And?
I said impatience.
Impatience. Anything else? Well, this yogi during the sitting opens the eyes, checks on the other meditators, whether they're sitting or not.
Restlessness,
yes.
No sense restraint.
No sense restraint. The restlessness, yeah, is correct. Distraction. So simple. And then in terms of his or her way of dealing with predominant objects, how would you characterize this?
Indulgent.
Lack of mindfulness.
There we go. Lack of mindfulness. So we can characterize that the yogi number one, and I'm summarizing a little bit and leaving a few answers out, or disregarding a few answers. So our first yogi will be characterized by disbelief, and is characterized by laziness, and then by forgetfulness, by distraction or restlessness, and then delusion rather than wrong view. Maybe next time I have to present it a little bit more in a different way. Now, in the case of our second yogi, Angelina is saying he or she will be closer to Nibbana, his or her practice is then characterized by which qualities? What's that?
Diligence.
Diligence. And another term for diligence would be? Mindfulness. Yes. That's your vigilance, also correct. So, and then what else?
Determination.
Do you have another word for this? Effort, here it comes. And Satna, then?
Faith,
yes, okay. So faith, effort, Satna, diligence, vigilance.
Determination.
Yeah, determination, effort is the same. And?
Uh,
Continuous mindfulness, yes, correct.
Those five factors of...
So you mean what, the five factors or the five powers?
Well, faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom.
Yes. Yes. And so the topic of our Dhamma talk today, and now is the time to reveal the topic, is the five controlling faculties. And as Jim has correctly detected said, those consist of faith, effort, mindfulness, concentration, and wisdom. Now, we are here, we're practicing here together not without a reason. We're not here just to waste our time and enjoy the good food and good accommodation. Now, those five controlling faculties in the Pali scriptural language are known as pancha indriyani, and they are defined as those mental factors that exercise control in their respective domains, and they also help to overcome their opposites. Now, let's take a closer look at, first of all, the term domain or sphere, and this term, in the case of the first controlling faculty, covers a range that goes from faith on the one hand side all the way to its opposite of disbelief or indecision. So the sphere would be the sphere of resolution in the Pali scriptural language known as adimokkha. And the other day the term appeared during the Dhamma talk. And so faith in Pali is known as saddha, and then indecision or disbelief, the opposite of faith in the Pali scriptural language, is known as asaddhiya. And we shall later on define in greater detail what is meant by faith, by effort, by mindfulness, by concentration, and wisdom. Now, the second domain or sphere is that of exertion, pagaha, in the Pali scriptural language. And this then covers which range? It goes from
sloth and torpor to effort.
Yes, from sloth and torpor to effort, or to put it differently, from laziness, kosaja in the Pali scriptural language, to effort. The third sphere is that of awareness, and this then covers the range from going from mindfulness to forgetfulness or inattention, and forgetfulness and inattention being known as mutta sati. And the Pali term for awareness would be upatthana in this context. Now, The next sphere or domain is satna, that of satna, non-distraction, in Pali scriptural language, known as satna avikepa, and then ranging from concentration, samadhi, all the way to distraction or agitation, known in the Pali scriptural language as vikepa. And finally, we have the sphere or domain of discernment, dasana, which then goes from wisdom, panya, all the way to delusion or ignorance, sammoha. Now, to exercise control in the respective domain or sphere means that the controlling faculty of faith then exercises control over or in the sphere of resolution, and in particular it deals certainly with its opposite of indecision and certain disbelief. The same thing then goes certainly for effort. Effort helps to control the laziness, which is part of this certain range or domain characterized as certain exertion. It also helps to overcome the respective opposite. Mind, the controlling faculty of mindfulness, then helps to overcome the opposite of forgetfulness in attention, or it exercises control in the sphere of awareness, upatthana. Likewise, the controlling faculty of concentration, samadhi, indriya, then exercises control over distraction or agitation, and satna wisdom then does its work in the sphere of discernment, dasana, and satna then helping to overcome the opposite of delusion or ignorance. So what we shall do today is we shall take a closer look at certainly the different aspects related to the controlling faculties, and drawing a lot from the Samyutta Nikaya, which contains a collection of discourses on the indriyas. But even though the collection is known as Indriya Samyutta, yet it does not deal exclusively with only with the five controlling faculties, but also with other factors that are in a larger sense were considered by the compilers of the text as certain relevant under the term indriya. The term, the Pali term indriya, appears in different contexts and therefore has different meanings. However, we will limit our discussion only to the five certain controlling faculties. Now, in the second, third, fourth, and fifth discourse of the 48th Samyutta, which is the discourse on the controlling faculties, we find, different types of people being defined according to the controlling faculties. Or to put it differently, we find a classification of human beings according to the, or in terms of the controlling faculties. Now, to should maybe read out one of these, one or two of these Satna Suttas. Let's take number three. Because bhikkhunis and lay meditators, there are these five faculties. What five? The faculty of faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and faculty of wisdom. When a meditator or when a noble disciple understands, as they really are, the origin of the passing away, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of the five faculties, then he or she is called a noble disciple who is a stream enterer, no longer bound to the netherworld, fixed in destiny with enlightenment as his or her destiny. So here the important phrase is, when a noble disciple understands, as they really are, the five controlling faculties, and then he or she is called a stream enterer. So a stream enterer, then, according to this definition, is one who has understood the five controlling faculties. Now, in discourse number 4 of the Indriya Samyutta, we find the following. The discourse is entitled Arahant. Because lay meditators, there are these five faculties. What five? The faculty of faith, energy, mindfulness, concentration, and intuitive wisdom. When, having understood, as they really are, the gratification, the danger, and the escape in the case of these five faculties, a meditator is liberated by non-clinging, then he or she is called a meditator who is an arahant, one whose taints are destroyed, who has lived the holy life, done what had to be done, laid down the burden, reached his or her own goal, utterly destroyed the fetters of existence, one completely liberated through final knowledge. So, in the case of an arahant, he or she is a person who has understood gratification, danger, and escape in the case of the five controlling faculties, and is also liberated by non-clinging and has destroyed the taints. So, an arahant. What this means is that there is a big difference in the way a stream enterer has understood the controlling faculties, or relates to the controlling faculties, and then the way an arahant does relate to them. Now, somewhat along the same line, the Buddha then goes on to make further, or to distinguish further, among human beings, according to the relative strength of faculties that certain people possess. And then distinguishing by way of the noble ones. So let's take one discourse here. And discourse number 18 from that same Samyutta, entitled Practicing. O meditators, there are these five faculties. What five? The faculty of faith, energy, mindfulness, and so on. One who has completed and fulfilled these five faculties is an arahant. If they are weaker than that, one is practicing for the realization of the fruit of Arahantship. If still weaker, one is a non-returner. If still weaker, one is practicing for the realization of the fruit of non-returning. If still weaker, one is a once-returner. If still weaker, one is practicing for the realization of the fruit of once-returning. If still weaker, one is a stream-enterer. If still weaker, one is practicing for the realization of the fruit of stream entry. But because bhikkhunis and lay meditators, I say that one in whom these five faculties are completely and totally absent is an outsider, one who stands in the faction of worldlings. Now, there's several things here. There's one point, point of objection you might disagree. First point is that, see, our mental those mental qualities that are necessary for the realization of the supramundane path into fruition, those mental qualities, be they the five controlling faculties or the seven enlightenment factors, are obviously different from person to person. And so in a person who's done already a number of retreats and has gained some experience and eventually breaks through, well, this person then is a stream enterer. So in such a person, the five controlling faculties will obviously be stronger than in maybe a person who is not practicing at all, or a person who has just started. And now, the more you practice, the more those five controlling faculties will get stronger and stronger and stronger. And so, thus, then with the attainment of the second noble path of once return, with this, the controlling faculties will be relatively speaking stronger than in the case of a stream enterer, but weaker than in the case of a non-returner, and so on and so forth. Now, it says here, towards the end of the discourse, I say that one in whom these five faculties are completely and totally absent is an outsider, one who stands in the faction of worldlings. So what is wrong with this statement? Or not wrong, but what is difficult to understand?
How they could be completely and totally absent as faculties.
There you go. There you go. So in an ordinary meditator who has not yet attained the fruition, path and fruition in connection with stream entry, these five controlling faculties will be there. They will be there to some extent. However, they will not be as strong as in the case of, let's say, a stream enterer. So, the footnote to this particular sutta explains that the Buddha was speaking in terms of absolute or in an absolute way, and limiting it only to the supramundane world, so to all of those who have already gained path and fruition knowledge. That is one approach. However, elsewhere in the text, the controlling faculties are clearly also mentioned with regard to ordinary worldlings. So just to clarify this particular point. Now, in terms of a practical application. See, in the world, and I mean mundane world or religious world, it doesn't matter. There are those who are extremely successful. There are those who are successful. There are those who are less successful. And there are those who are maybe not that successful. And one of the reasons for the differences in success may, of course, be many different things, but among those factors, those five controlling faculties may play an important role. So if you think of someone like the Venerable Sayadaw Pandita Biwamsa, who at the age of 90 is still traveling far and wide, and he's traveling at least once, twice or thrice a year abroad. He's going from Burma to, he's coming to Nepal, and he's going to Malaysia, and he's going to Taiwan, he's going to the US to conduct meditation retreats for the benefit of meditators. Well, this, do you think, will be possible in the case of someone who's not practicing, who has no mental strength? Many people won't even have the health to do this. No, they won't even have the physical strength to do this. So there are some people, whether in the religious world or in an ordinary world, who have trained themselves to be strong, to have strong mental qualities, and those like strong mental qualities, the five controlling faculties might certainly be some of those, and other qualities such as, let's say, patience, and then maybe even a certain mundane form of wisdom, and as a result of this, they then are successful. So success, obviously, for some also comes in not so legal ways, and I don't mean those people. But for those who are successful in a proper way, they have certain qualities that justify, or will have certain qualities that will justify their success. Now, to show you the potential of the potential and the importance of these controlling faculties, in discourse number 43, towards the end, it clearly states to what level the practice, the training in these five controlling faculties can lead us. So, a discourse entitled Saketa, and I'm not going to go into the details of this discourse, and towards the end it just says, because that which is the faculty of faith is the power of faith, and so on, and it is because one has developed and cultivated these five faculties that a meditator, by the destruction of the taints in this very life, enters and dwells in the taintless liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, realizing it for himself or herself with direct knowledge. So, the perfection of those certain five controlling faculties may yield a tremendous benefit, and the maximum, the maximum being the attainment of arahantship, which is described as the destruction of the taints. Now, what do you think? These five controlling faculties, the order in which they are being mentioned, is of a haphazard nature, or is there any significance to them?
Yes.
Is there any significance to the order?
Buddha never did anything haphazard.
Yes, okay.
You have to start with faith because that's what propels you to the other factors.
Yes, so you start with faith and then...
But I know there's a meaning to the order. Yeah.
So,
out of...
Yes, what's this?
Is it from the easiest to the hardest?
That's actually an interesting aspect. Well, wisdom is certainly the result of the earlier ones. Now, the connection is as follows. See, when you have faith in something, then faith and conviction in something, then will you be willing to apply yourself to this certain project or whatever it might be, or work? Obviously, yes. And then the controlling faculty of energy or effort follows naturally. So based on faith in the practice, and also based on the effort made in a continuous manner, and sending the observing mind towards the predominant object over and over and over again, then naturally mindfulness will arise. And the Venerable Sadhu Pandita gives a few more explanatory steps, and by saying, okay, jhanic or the factor of vitakka aiming will also be there, and so if aiming is there and effort is also there, then the mind will be rubbing the object. When those are the three factors are there based on faith, then mindfulness will be there, and certainly will be continuous. So if the effort is continuous, then the mindfulness is also likely to be continuous. Now, if you're mindful of a predominant object and it's one object, and you stay with it, let's say for a longer period of time, then quite naturally the mind will kind of get glued to the object. It will be focused on the object, squarely facing the object, and in other words, certain concentration is there. And then, in the presence of those first four controlling or mental factors, so faith, effort, mindfulness, and sudden concentration, well, when a mind is concentrated, as we know already from earlier discourses, and happiness is also present, and happiness also present, then intuitive wisdom can arise. When the mind is distracted, then intuitive wisdom cannot arise. And so let's see how Elder Sariputta has explained all of this, as is recorded in discourse number 50 of this same Indriya Samyutta. A little bit longer, I'll just give you the highlights of it. So, thus have I heard on one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling among the Angans, where there was a town of the Angans named Apana. There the Blessed One addressed the Venerable Sariputta thus: Sariputta, does the noble disciple who is completely dedicated to the Tathagata and has full confidence in him entertain any perplexity or doubt about the Tathagata or the Tathagata's teaching? To this, Elder Sariputta says, Venerable Sir, the noble disciple who is completely dedicated to the Tathagata and has full confidence in him does not entertain any perplexity or doubt about the Tathagata or the Tathagata's teaching. It is indeed to be expected that a noble disciple who has faith will dwell with energy aroused for the abandoning of unwholesome states and the acquisition of wholesome states, and so on. And then, it is indeed to be expected that a noble disciple who has faith and whose energy is aroused will be mindful, possessing supreme mindfulness and discretion, etc. And then, That a noble disciple who has faith, whose energy is aroused and whose mindfulness is established, will gain concentration, will gain one-pointedness of mind, having made release the object. And then, it is indeed to be expected that a noble disciple who has faith, whose energy is aroused, whose mindfulness is established, and whose mind is concentrated, will understand thus. This is samsara without discoverable beginning, and so on and so forth. And so, when one has again and again strived in such a way, again and again recollected in such a way, concentrated one's mind, and again and again understood with wisdom in such a way, that a noble disciple gains complete faith. Thus, as to these are things that previously I had only heard about, now I dwell having contacted them with the body and having pierced them through with wisdom. I see that faith of his, venerable sir, is his faculty of faith. Good, Sariputta. The Buddha replies, Sariputta, the noble disciple who's completely dedicated to the Tathagata and has full confidence in him, does not entertain any perplexity. And then the Buddha basically repeats all of Elder Sariputta's explanations, verbatim. Now, in other discourses of that same Samyutta, it says that the wisdom faculty is the chief among the states conducive to enlightenment, and wisdom is also referred to as the factor which stabilizes the other faculties. And in discourse number 43, we find another interesting point, namely that explains about the relationship between the controlling faculties, your indriyas, and the powers. And there it says, both of them, the faculties as well as the powers, are identical. So the same list of factors, and they are like two streams of a river flowing around a midstream island. And the difference is that the controlling faculties exercise control in their respective domain, whereas the powers are unwavering. They're not shaken by the opposites. Now, in terms of definitions that are given in the various suttas in connection with the controlling faculties, we find the following. Namely, the controlling faculty of faith is defined as faith in the perfect enlightenment of the Buddha and the efficacy of of the path that he has discovered. In other words, having faith in the virtues of the Buddha. Now, faith is an important quality, and faith can be understood in different ways. Now, in faith, in accordance with the Buddha's teachings, is not a type of blind faith, but rather a faith that encourages or that includes the spirit of inquiry and the doubt about dubitable things. And With regard to this certain faith, it is a faith that is that arises not necessarily or not only on hearing the teachings, but primarily, the faith then should develop further by supporting it with understanding. So what happens is, when we practice, we then carefully observe whatever predominant object arises in the body and in the mind, and so with this, then we gain direct understanding. And this direct understanding then leads us to having faith or placing faith in what we have seen. And then it's not just because of hearsay, but rather the faith is based on direct experience. And people in highly industrialized countries very much like this approach, because one, there's a way of verifying it for oneself. Not, of course, not for everyone, but for a fair number of people. Now, with regard to this faith, we can make further qualifications by saying that at first there is just initial faith, which will be relatively weak, shaky, and then gradually that certain faith becomes trusting or verifying faith, okapana sata in the Pali language, and then eventually with practice this faith becomes what?
Unshakable
faith. There you go. And sapna, which in the Pali scriptural language is known as avicca pasada. And what this means is, through the realization of the noble path of Fatna stream entry, so Sotapatti Magga, the fetter of skeptical doubt, vichikicca, gets totally uprooted from the stream of consciousness, and when doubt is gone, what remains is faith. Is certain faith. And then even if the most gifted or talented speaker comes along and talks about certain some other wonderful religious certain system or particular school of philosophy, this will not sway the person's faith in the Dhamma or faith in the Dhamma anymore. And so that's an important distinction, and one way of seeing whether a person has really gained the practice or has gained the Dhamma or not is by carefully checking the person's faith in the Buddha's teachings. Now, maybe just this much time is limited. Now, the second controlling faculty is that of effort, and effort in the context of the controlling faculties is defined as the four supreme efforts, sammapadana, in the Pali scriptural language. And the four samapadanas, or supreme efforts, are the effort to avoid, then there, and the effort to avoid unwholesome states which have not arisen from arising. This in the Pali scriptural language is known as samvara padana. Then number two, we have the effort to abandon unwholesome mental states which have arisen already, which in the Pali scriptural language is known as pahana padana. And then we have as number three the effort to develop wholesome states which have not yet satna arisen, and satna then in the Pali scriptural language known as bhavanapadana, and finally there is the effort and to maintain those ultimate states which have already arisen in Pali, anurakana padana. So, by, for instance, restraining our senses and making effort from moment to moment, we avoid unwholesome mental states satna from arising. And then, if unwholesome mental states have arisen already, such as a thought of fitness and your lust, or some maybe hate or hateful thought, or thought of cruelty, etc., then we will make an effort to overcome this or those such kind of thoughts. Now, as for the third effort, this is the effort to arouse unarisen wholesome states. And so wholesome states that could start with very simple things such as generosity, dana, such as getting established in virtue, sila, such as starting to develop the mind through samatha meditation or vipassana meditation, practicing loving kindness, compassion, and so on and so forth. So bringing about wholesome qualities that earlier on were not certain present. And certain in the case of, and this might then also include bringing about the seven controlling, the seven enlightenment certain factors. And as for the fourth supreme effort, this is to maintain arisen wholesome mental states, and thus one will do everything to encourage them to grow further, to mature, to come to full perfection of development. Now, maybe this much in terms of effort, and then in terms of the mind, the controlling faculty of mindfulness, this simply consists of the four establishments of mindfulness, so mindful conduct or mindful contemplation of bodily objects, of feedings, and then of the mind, cittanupassana, satipatthana, and then finally of dhammas. And Marcia has already given two talks on those, so there's no need to go into this any further. And then, in terms of concentration, concentration is defined as concentration of a mind which is associated with wholesome consciousness, and this may, wholesome consciousness which may reach an absorption or anything corresponding to this, so any form of unification of the mind, one-pointedness. And concentration being defined as the fixing, a state of the mind being firmly fixed, or the fixing of the mind on a particular object. It could be one single conceptual object, but could also be some object of ultimate reality. Now, various satna definitions for concentration exist, but certainly we just don't have the time to go into these. And then, in terms of the controlling faculty of wisdom, this is Satna defined as Satna, well, the understanding of the four noble truths. The noble truth of the existence of suffering, the noble truth of the cause Satna for, or the origin of Satna suffering, and then the noble truth of the cessation of suffering, and finally the noble truth of the path leading to the cessation of Satna suffering. Now, when it comes to these controlling faculties, it might be helpful to know that they oftentimes are grouped in a certain way, namely the controlling faculty of faith and wisdom forms one pair, and the controlling faculty of effort and concentration forms the second pair. And with regard to faith and wisdom, one might say that this pair ensures that emotional and the intellectual sides of one's spiritual life are kept in balance. Whereas in the case of energy and concentration, they ensure that the activating and restraining sides of mental development are kept in balance. So there are many occasions when we need to restrain the mind, especially when the mind is just about to go into some stupidity. And on other occasions, when the mind is somewhat sluggish, then it needs to be activated. And mindfulness belongs to neither side, but oversees those two pairs, and holding them in a mutually enriching tension. It is said that the four controlling faculties of faith and wisdom and of energy and concentration should not be in excess, nor should they be deficient, because of certain consequences, and we shall look at those certain consequences in a couple of minutes. Whereas in the case of mindfulness, it is said in the text that mindfulness is never deficient. So even in an arahant, mindfulness can be developed further and further, or deepened more and more. Now, for the controlling faculty of faith, two factors are given as contributing to the arising of faith, and those are joy, piti, as well as pleasure, sukha. And when those are present, then one will take much interest in what is going on. Now, the balance of the controlling of those two pairs is extremely important for a proper development in our meditation practice. And the Venerable Sadhu Pandita B. once said, Fatna Burma on several occasions has said, a meditator may have developed his or her practice already to a relatively high level, yet if the five controlling faculties are not properly balanced, then the person will not gain the Dhamma. And it may take a long, long time. However, if one has developed one's practice to a relatively high level, and the five controlling faculties are well balanced, in good balance, then it may not take much time at all. It may be just a matter of a couple of hours. And so this balance of the controlling faculties is crucial for a further deepening of, or for the realization of the Dhamma. And there is even a technical term for this, namely given as indriya samatha. And so this equilibrium is indispensable for the realization of this, of spiritual attainments, because when one faculty becomes strong and the others are weak, then what will happen? What will happen to the others? If one faculty is exceedingly strong,
the others can atrophy.
Yes. Well, the others won't be able to perform their functions properly. Each faculty performs a certain function. And so, as an example, if the faculty of faith is stronger than the others, then the faculty of energy cannot perform its certain function of exerting, the faculty of mindfulness its function of establishing, the faculty of concentration its function of not distracting, and the faculty of wisdom its function of understanding. Now, there is a famous case, not just one, actually several, and case of a disciple of the Buddha, namely Sona Koli Wisa. And even though he was trying very hard to attain arahantship, yet he could not do it. Now, the Buddha, while dwelling on Gijakuta, became aware of this and visited Sona Koli Wisa. Sona Koli Wisa, in his life as a lay person prior to becoming a monastic, had certainly been an excellent player of the veena, certain instruments, a string instrument. And suddenly the Buddha knew this, and suddenly he asked him whether back then, during his days as a musician, whether the veena or music played on the veena, where the strings were either overstrung or overlaxed, whether that music would suddenly be nice or not. And obviously veena or Sona Koli Wisa knew the answer. Likewise, the Buddha explained to him, if certain faculties of the mind are in excess or deficient, then one will not certainly be able to practice properly and not gain the Dhamma. So, Elder Sona Koli Wisa took the Buddha's instructions to heart and applied them to and in no time did he become an arahant. Another case of excessive effort would be the case of Elder Ananda, the attendant of the Buddha, who strenuously did walking meditation for the larger part of the night, and then overdid it, and did not gain arahantship. It was only after realizing this that he decided to lie down and to relax a little bit, and while he was in the process of lying down, having not yet placed his head fully on the bed, he then gained the Dhamma. Now, in this connection, just briefly, I'll try to make it as quick as possible. So, when faith is in excess, then the symptom of this will be what? When faith is in excess.
Credulity.
Yes, credulity, that is correct. And then what do we need to do in a situation like this? So then the mind is gullible, one is gullible, one will have blind faith. And so in a situation like this, one needs to be just more realistic. One needs to realize that that one is getting carried away. Now, when so-called wisdom is in excess, then this satna may lead to intellectual cleverness or cunningness. And in this satna situation, one simply needs to stop that intellectualizing. When effort is in excess, satna, we find what? Body and mind get? Very calm?
Agitation.
Agitation, there you go. That's correct, Jerry. So, body and mind they may become extremely restless. So if you notice that you're becoming restless for no particular reason, then check this certain situation. So what to do in a situation like this? Relax. Relax, back off a little bit. Try it less. And then, when concentration is in excess, then what's the symptom for this? Sloth and torpor, yes, sleepiness. And as a countered measure, one might want to open up the senses. Now, in the case of a deficiency of faith, then manifests in with which symptom?
Doubt.
Doubt, yes, that's correct. And so then you want to arouse your faith. And so when wisdom is deficient, then this will manifest as obvious. Pardon me?
Lack of discernment.
Yes, lack of discernment, well put. And so then we want to observe more carefully, since this will observe more carefully and make sure that concentration is there. And with this, we will come to know the true nature of objects. When effort is deficient, then the symptom for this will be laziness, various forms of laziness, and obviously, then what we need to do is we need to make more effort. And finally, when concentration is deficient, then we will be distracted, and then we want to restrain our senses, and we may want to work with the pain, since this is known to develop concentration, or we might want to stay with one object for a longer period of time. Now, still Patisambhita Magga, the path of discrimination, has some interesting advice to give on how to develop or how to purify the five faculties in 15 aspects. And so, when one avoids faithless persons and cultivates and frequents and honors faithful persons and reviews suttas that inspire confidence, then the faith faculty is purified in a person in these certain three aspects. So the three aspects are avoiding, cultivating, frequenting and honoring, and certain reviewing. And then the same thing goes for effort. So by avoiding idle persons, cultivating, frequenting and honoring energetic persons, and then reviewing right endeavors, four supreme efforts, with this one's energy faculty gets purified. The same thing goes for this remaining three controlling faculties. And then in the fourth chapter of Patisambhita Magga, section 4, yet another interesting way is mentioned. So in the case of the faith faculty, how can we work on it? How can we develop it? Well, by intentionally abandoning non-faith, one is developing faith. And when one is developing the faith faculty, one abandons non-faith. And the same thing then goes for the remaining controlling faculties. This brings us more or less to the end of our discourse today, and let me conclude by wishing, may in the course of your meditation retreat here, may these controlling faculties grow stronger and stronger. May they grow into powerful controlling faculties. May they also be become more balanced, and then when the necessary conditions are there, may they contribute to the realization of the noble path of stream entry during this very retreat here in Taos. And this is it.